Here's your host for the Maine Outdoors, V. Paul Reynolds.
Well, welcome, folks, in Radio Land to the new and improved Maine Outdoors. It's sort of new, and it's sort of improved. This is Matt Dunlap, along with Jim Layton and Norm Plourd. Hello, gentlemen.
Good evening.
And we want to welcome you all to the Maine Outdoors. If you like to hunt, fish, trap, snowmobile, camp, hike, bike, bird watch, snowshoe, or do anything in the Maine Outdoors, this is the show for you. This hour, Jim Layton and Norm Plourd and I, along with our special guest and you, will explore the Maine Outdoors. If you'd like to participate, the number to call in is 1-800-966-1039.
That's right. And you have to dial all the numbers, even if you're calling from Bangor.
That's right. You can't just dial 1039 like you used to when we were kids.
Right.
And
that's
make
correct.
The connection. So V. Paul Reynolds, although he was announced by our robot in the big computer, he's out of town somewhere.
Yes, he is.
Is he down south?
He's in Florida, way, way down on the western side.
Basking in the sun.
Well, there you go.
Way, way down.
It's a tough world.
Esmeralda, something like that.
Yeah, tough life. Somebody's got to live it.
Yep.
I'm just up here working away. You know,
Slaving away.
We have a very special guest tonight.
I guess we do.
We sure do. And I made the phone call because, I do this once in a while. And I try to think ahead. You try not to do it 2 days before the show. I mean, I used to do that. It's like I'd call somebody. It's like, you have any interest in coming on the show? So I try to give it a few weeks. So a week and a half, 2 weeks ago or so, I gave Tim Peabody, Deputy Commissioner of Fish and Wildlife, a call. And I said, look, we've got the radio show going on. You guys got anything you want to talk about? Anybody you want to have come on? And I got the call last week. I'm coming. Good evening, Tim Peabody.
I'm here.
There he is, live
pleasure,
in color.
Man.
All the way from Metropolitan Northport, I believe.
Metropolitan downtown Northport.
That's right. Gotham, as it were, in Waldo County. Are you in Waldo County?
It's Waldo County.
Sure is.
Outstanding. Yep. Well done. Well done. Well, welcome, Tim. We're going to be talking to you quite a little bit here in a little while, but we got a couple of things we got to take care of first. Jim.
We do.
We have Outdoor Digest, which is brought to us each and every week by my favorite outdoor publication, the Northwood Sporting Journal.
And mine.
Outstanding. Well, you have extraordinary taste, Jim.
Well, I guess I do, but you ought to see the pictures, how beautiful they are. And very few typos.
There you go. So, anyway, it's still ice fishing season.
It is.
Be very careful.
I was watching guys ice fishing today within sometimes 5 feet of the open water.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's, you know,
Peel's Pond.
That's where the fish are.
Where they hang out.
That's where they hang out, right by the holes. You know, it's like, I don't know. I can't swim a stroke to save my life, but it wouldn't make much difference if the water is about 36 degrees.
Yep.
So
that's
it wouldn't
right.
take too long.
Have we had it, many people go through this fall, this winter? I haven't heard about a lot.
There has been, but they've come out safely. But
good.
There's been a lot of people go through.
Vehicles,
snowmobiles.
Yep. Four wheelers.
Yeah, it's been quite a winter for it.
Yeah, well, you don't want to do that, folks, and it's getting warmer out there, and when it gets warm and windy, the ice gets rotten pretty fast.
You know, on Peel's Pond, the ice is starting to turn black already. It was that frosty white, and now it's starting to turn black, and the whole eastern edge of the pond is all open.
Wow, so be careful. That's the message from Maine Outdoors. Be careful on the ice.
Yep.
And we're getting into the season again. Whatever season it is, we've never really gotten out of a season. We've had ice fishing, we've had coyote hunting, rabbit hunting, bobcat hunting, a whole bunch of stuff.
Crows.
So, but if you don't do all those things, if you wait for spring fishing and the moose lottery and stuff like that, get your license. Get your license. It's a good investment. Maine.gov/IFNW online, or go to your town office or other license agent.
That is slick. And Tim, can you register your boat online now?
Some towns.
You can.
You can.
Wow.
It's an excise tax issue.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we're about 50% of our licenses are online now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nobody's going to the town offices.
That's great.
Well, it's
well, think of the money you save.
You save in the convenience.
Convenience.
If you have somebody coming into town, you want to take them fishing, and it's a Sunday night, you don't have to wait till the town office opens at 8
right.
o'clock next morning. Just get right on your computer and do it.
MEFishWildlife.com.
Yep.
Or 9 o'clock at night, and the town office is closed the next day, and you're going ice fishing in the morning.
Yeah.
That's what happened to me this winter.
Well, you know, and that's what makes it so handy. We've been doing it now for quite a few years, and it's like I said, about half of our licenses are sold online. I know a lot of folks like to go down to the town office and visit with folks, and it's sort of a ritual for them, but If you forget to do that, you can always do it online if you have computer access. Now, we're in the middle, we're getting in now to the show season. We just had a very successful Penobscot Fly Fisher's Cabin Fever Reliever that wrapped up today. Norm, you want to talk about that a little bit?
It was excellent. I think it's the best one we've had. I know yesterday afternoon, somewhere around 2 o'clock, I believe we'd already surpassed our best year. So, we did very well. A lot of good people turn out.
Ran out of hot dogs.
We ran out of hot dogs, whoa, beef stew,
that's
chili.
That's crisis right
there.
It
was really good. I mean, there's a lot of people, a lot of kids. It was great to see the kids.
Well, it's a great introduction to the Penobscot Fly Fishers, and they do an awful lot of stuff, not only in the community for like teaching kids how to tie flies, but I haven't renewed my membership in a little bit, and I need to get back on that because one of the things they do, Jim, they actually have outings all the time, and you'll get these email alerts. A bunch of us are going up Kanduska Extreme. A bunch of us are going here. A bunch of us are going there. And, you know, if I had a little bit more time, I'd be all over that. I think that's a great way to find some great fishing holes.
It was about 3-4 years ago that Wayne took charge of the events, and there's quite a few outings.
Yeah, it's great stuff. So now we've gotten through that, and coming up, the Penobscot County Conservation Association's Eastern Maine Sportsman Show is coming up the 16th through the 18th. The Presque Isle Fishing Game Club Show. You ever been up to Presque Isle for that?
I used to live in Presque Isle.
I didn't ask if you used to live in Presque Isle. I've asked if you've been to the show.
No. But I've been to the Rod and Gun Club there many times.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Yes.
Nick Archer and the crew there do a tremendous job. March 24th and 25th is probably one of the best medium-sized shows you're going to go to.
Yes.
And then the State of Maine Sportsman Show, sponsored by the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, is March 30th through April 1st. And that's in Augusta.
That's in Augusta. You forget to mention where the first one was.
In the University of Maine.
There you go.
The Eastern Maine Sportsman Show at the University of Maine, in the newly renovated Fieldhouse, which is really, really gorgeous. So, despite my dire warnings about the ice, we still have some ice fishing derbies going on, coming up, one of which has been going on since December 1st. It goes to the end of March, And that is the Maine Ice Fishing Derby, all legal waters in Maine, statewide. Talk to Wes Ash at 54 Clover Lane in Brewer, 522-0834, and you have to email in your weights. This is kind of the honor system, it looks like.
Yeah.
But they have $250 in cash prizes for anybody in the state of Maine who wants to participate. So it's probably worth – you'd be surprised how many people don't sign up, and they ought to, because that's just laying there waiting for you.
Well, look at the big ones they're catching, and they could be winning in their –
the guy that got that 40-inch togue.
Yeah, check that out.
Win every derby in the state with that one.
Yep.
The Blue Ridge Riders Snowmobile Club is hosting a week-long derby starting yesterday going through the 10th. Brian Scott and Rockwood, 534-2261, and that's in Moosehead Lake. And the weigh-in is at the Moosehead Bait and Tackle Shop. $500 in prizes, Jim.
Whoa.
March 10th, the Trap Corner Ridge Riders ATV Club is sponsoring a derby at Bryant Pond. Contact Jason Koskela at 576-9675. I hope I pronounced his name right.
I think you did.
I'm famous for mispronouncing stuff on this show, Jim.
Well, I know you are, but I think you did a good job on that one.
I hope so. So the weigh-ins at Bryant Pond Boat Launch, $850 for the taken.
That'll buy you bait for next year.
It sure will. The Greenville High School Key Club. Now, that's a good organization.
Yep.
They have a Moosehead Lake Derby on March 11th. Isaac Crabtree is coordinating that. Give him a shout at 695-2666. The total cash prize amount is $170 or 17% of ticket sales, whichever is greater. I'd love to know the story behind those numbers.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is one. So,
anybody giving away a lifetime fishing and hunting license?
We gave one away at the Maine Youth Fishing Game Club, did a random draw for a kid to get a lifetime license.
Yep.
At our ice, I think at both of our ice fishing days that we had. I haven't seen anything in the derby list.
Hmm.
But call these people.
Yeah.
They may have something like that going on. It's a great prize.
Sure is.
You got anything going on?
Well, not really. I'm just waiting for turkey season to start so I can run some turkeys off.
Yeah, I see them by the side of the road.
Yeah, the deer that usually come in to the people that feed them,
mm-hmm.
They're not coming in as they have been But I saw them tonight on the way here, and they were all in the field eating grass like they should be.
Yep.
That was beautiful. There was about 8 or 10 of them there. It was great.
I had 11 hens in the yard this morning being courted by 3 toms.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, the illustrious Dottie Connelly, who I work with at my office, used to chair the Fish and Wildlife Committee back in the day. She told me she saw a pheasant crossing the road the other day.
So that's
unusual.
A few pheasants. You see one every once in a while. Mm-hmm. A few will make it.
I think it'd be fun to raise pheasant, just let them go.
The state of Maine used to do that.
Many moons
ago. Lot.
A lot. Yeah. There was a place in Holden, I think, they used to do it.
Yep.
And the Gray Animal Farm was the state core pheasant farm.
A lot of the fish and game clubs used to raise for the state.
Yep. We used to have quite a few walking the Snow's Corner Road, believe it or not, in Orrington.
They're
beautiful.
A lot of stuff out there to do. So anyway, I don't have anything else. So if you don't have anything else, nobody else has anything else?
Just be careful on the ice because it's getting really, really rotten ice.
Yep.
I don't care where you're going.
Well, it's a bad way to go.
It sure is.
So don't do it. So that wraps up Outdoor Digest, brought to us this week, as it is each and every week, by our friends at the Northwood Sporting Journal, my favorite outdoor publication.
Mm.
So before we take our first commercial break, Jim, we need to announce the prize.
I guess
we do. For our trivia question.
Now, we are going to have a trivia this week.
We are going to have a trivia question this week, and we are going to have a prize. It's going to be a little bit unorthodox, because we've been conspiring here off the air about what we're going to do about a prize.
Yeah.
So the deputy commissioner has offered up a Fish and Wildlife hat, and I will mail it to whoever the winner is. So you still have to take down the address.
Sure.
And we will mail that to them. Maybe throw in an autographed photograph of myself.
There you go. Either that or sign the liner of the cap.
Something highly desired, you know.
Yeah.
you need to throw away something besides the bag, right?
Right.
All right, so we have a trivia question, and I hope this one's not too hard, because the last one we did when I was on the air before was around... It was like half an hour before we finally got the right answer on that one. So this one shouldn't be too bad. And there's actually more than one right answer to this.
Oh, great. So, that ought to do it.
we try to encompass everything we can.
And you're trying to keep us out of trouble, huh?
Trying to keep us out of trouble. Should be easy for those of you who've paddled the river should know this. Those who have paddled all the tributaries should know the other answer. How long, Jim, long is the Penobscot River? Remember, there's more than one right answer. If you think you know one of those answers, give us a shout at 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back with more in just a minute on Maine Outdoors. And if you're joining us late, this is Maine Outdoors with Matt Dunlap, Norm Plord, and Jim Layton with our special guest, Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Deputy Commissioner Tim Peabody, sitting by, awaiting the answer to a pending trivia question. How long is the Penobscot River? And remember, folks, there's more than one right answer.
So we have a caller.
We have a caller. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Rock Oliver from Madame Astonis, Maine.
Hey, Rock.
From where the Mattawam Cake comes in to the dam on the Penobscot by eastern Maine, it's 40 miles.
Okay, well, that's... one answer. I'm looking for the comprehensive answer from top to bottom or with all the tributaries.
65.
No, not quite.
Okay.
Try it again later on, Rock.
All right, thank you.
All right. We have another caller on line 39. Good evening. This is Maine Outdoors. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Jay calling from Heartland.
Hey, Jay. Do you think you know the answer?
109 miles.
What do you think there, Mr. Deputy Commissioner?
Well, it sounds pretty impressive to me.
That's actually one of the right answers, Jay. 109 miles if you go down the main stem from top to bottom. If you go the east branch and west branch and count those two, it's about 264 miles. It's the second longest river in the state of Maine and the longest river that's contained entirely within the state boundaries. The river discharges an average of about 12,500 cubic feet per second, which is about an entire swimming pool every second.
Wow.
That's a lot of water. You stay on the line, Jim. Jay, you stay on the line, and we're going to get you. Do you have any questions for us, first of all, before I send you off to Norm?
I don't believe so.
All right. Well, good job. Wait. Now, have you paddled the whole thing?
No, I've motored some of it, but I haven't paddled much of it.
All right. Well, when you do that, call back in. We'll have you on the air.
Alrighty.
All right, you stay on the line, and Norm will take your information.
Thanks.
So yeah, it's a big river, and I think sometimes we forget how big it is. But I think we have something like 5,000 miles of or 3,000 miles of rivers and streams in the state of Maine.
Yeah, I think it's closer to 5.
Closer to 5,000.
Even yeah.
Yeah, and then we have about 5,000 ponds and lakes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, 6,000 lakes and ponds.
6,000 lakes.
Oh, yeah.
No, so it's a lot for a district game warden to keep track of.
It certainly is for one person.
So, and, you know, I think we have, I think we still have some warden districts that are bigger than Rhode Island.
That's correct. Northern Maine.
Northern Maine. So Tim Peabody, Deputy Commissioner of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, you've been in the department for many, many years. You were in education for a while after you retired as colonel. And what year did you start with the department, I believe, as a district game warden?
As a deputy warden in 1982, so I've seen a lot of changes.
Yeah, I bet
actually,
you have.
Actually, I've seen things go full circle, actually. go back to the way that they used to be.
Now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's always really been, in my view, it's always been the most important part of the department has been the guys in the field. The men and women in the field, the biologists, the wardens, whoever. And it seems like, you know, the less you hear about the department, it seems like the more effective they're being.
Yeah, it means the public's somewhat satisfied with what's going on out there. Yeah. Nobody's all satisfied all the time, and we don't expect that. It's running pretty smoothly when you don't hear a lot of complaints about field staff. And
yep.
People get their complaints taken care of and enforcement to the level they want and catch some fish, shoot some moose.
Yeah.
You know, it's all good.
Well, you know, our old songs, talk about bagging bucks and catching trout, but the stream's fished out. And I think a lot of what the department does very well is get information out to sportsmen about what's going on. You know, I've gotten some great places to hunt just talking to a local game warden. They'll tell me where to go from what they see and what they're hearing about, even in the general stores. Now, when you were a district game warden and then you were in leadership, you were a regional sergeant for the warden service. And then sometime in the 90s, you moved up a couple of pegs really fast, if I remember.
Yeah, it was 1998, sergeant to colonel. And
that's a bit of a jump.
A bit of a jump.
I think somewhere...
A frying pan.
I think somewhere I have the plan that you wrote up for the warden service, which seemed to be... pretty effective, got a lot of people's attention, including ours, and you were a colonel for a few years. And then you taught at Unity College.
Unity College for 10 years, believe it or not.
Really? That's hard to believe.
I know.
So now you're back at the department.
Yeah, and it's nice because a lot of the students I taught at Unity are in the department as wardens, so I get to see them still.
That's pretty amazing. Going forward with the warden service and the folks that you talk to and you get to work with in the field, what's new with the warden service? Let's start with the warden service.
They're still running on the same number of wardens that they had back in the 80s and 90s. And even though they're more effective electronically now with technology and stuff, it's still hard to keep up with the complaints that come in from the public. The public still likes to be served in person and not necessarily electronically.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge there. And, there's a lot of people still recreating in the outdoors. And as I mentioned this one, there's been a lot of people through the ice, still a lot of lost people. Actually, it's interesting. I was talking to one of the pilots, a retired pilot, Gary Dumont, and he said you don't have a lot of lost hunters anymore, which I had lost hunters every night that it snowed and rained.
Hmm.
And people have GPSs, cell phones, and that's just kind of an interesting thing.
But, people still get lost, whether they're sportsmen or not, and the warden service is charged with going to find them.
Yeah, the general public's getting lost as much as they ever did. But the hunters, who are more in tune to, using outdoor equipment, are getting lost less.
Well, maybe that's not such a bad thing.
No, it's great.
so, you know, with the Warden Service basically running on the same set of resources it's always had, that must, you know, engender some peculiar challenges when you have the nature of outdoor recreation changing with more people who are not sportsmen, you know, doing more outdoor stuff, hiking, kayaking, parasailing, whatever. You know, do you see an increase in the number of non-sportsman complaints that the Warden Service has to respond to?
Yeah, the more people that get out there, just as you mentioned, the general kayakers and hikers, the more they're quite often not in tune to the outdoors as much as our hunters and fishermen are. And so we do have a fair amount of activity with the paddle sports. You know, and hikers lost on the Appalachian Trail, we still have a lot of that's injury, though.
You know, some of the ads that the department has out about being prepared for the outdoors, which are really pretty funny. You know, the guy wearing Crocs trying to hike up Mount Katahdin. That's, you know, sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it's probably more real than not, isn't it?
Yeah, those are designed, actually, to get that the public that doesn't really understand who's in charge of the outdoors or who regulates the outdoors to get to know the department. Yeah. And they do it through that tongue-in-cheek type of, you know, if you have a problem in the outdoors, call the Fish and Wildlife Department, call a biologist, call a game warden. And that's what that program's all about, keepers of the outdoors.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't think to make the call until they're in real trouble. We're going to come back with more in just a few minutes. Stay tuned, folks, with Tim Peabody on Maine Outdoors. We'll be right back with more in just a minute. And if you joined us late, this is Matt Dunlap along with Norm Plord and Jim Layton with our special guest, Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Deputy Commissioner Tim Peabody. And we're talking about the department. And, you know, as usual, Jim, you know, we have our best conversations when during the commercial breaks. We were talking about doing outreach to the public on, you know, that the department's been working on for many, many years in different forms. And, you know, it's always a tough thing to reach people that you've never touched before, you know, in the outdoors. And we were talking before the show about the Maine Youth Fishing Game Club ice fishing days and how we had, you know, folks who'd never been out there before, just an absolute wonder at what we were putting on for all these kids. We had almost like something like 900 kids over 2 weeks come out and go ice fishing, including a family that had just moved to Maine in the fall. They're from Maryland. They knew nothing about ice fishing. And it was a great vector for them because we had everything and it was free. But, you know, it's hard to do that programmatically as an executive department of the state of Maine, touching all those people on a systematic basis. But you're kind of doing it in no small ways through some of the Outdoor Partners programs and some of the other stuff that the department's been doing. You want to talk about that at all? Or?
Sure. You know, we have a number of programs to get public support, not necessarily from hunters or fishermen, the Support Wildlife license plate. You know, people are attracted to that because it says Support Wildlife. They may not hunt or fish. That's very popular. It helps the fish hatcheries and the landowner relations program. And then you got the Outdoor Partners program, which primarily funds the landowner relations program. And that can be, again, from people who don't hunt or fish, and they're attracted to it. We've just started Keepers of the Maine Outdoors, and that's to get in front of a public that doesn't know who actually cares for our wildlife and regulates our wildlife and protects our wildlife in the state. And that's that's going extremely well. And that's a whole new group of people, potentially the hikers, the kayakers, bird watchers, that, again, want to learn about the department.
And I think for sportsmen, we all have a vested interest in doing that because, you know, a lot of people don't realize what's right around them. You know, I've taken a couple of nice bear 10 minutes from my house. And when I tell people that, you know, that I took a 270-pound bear, you know, not 10 minutes from downtown Old Town, they're absolutely floored by that. But the outdoors is all around us, and you get the non-sportsmen to understand what it is sportsmen do and how important the department is in managing all that. Then when you have that circumstance that's going to come again someday, you know, you have a referendum question about our outdoor heritage, people are a little bit more fluent in what we're talking about. And I think, you know, there's some real value in doing those types of programs.
It certainly is, Matt. It gives them a place to go. If they see, like in the Keepers of the Maine Outdoors program, they know that they can call a biologist or a warden, they can learn about the issue. And that's, you know, that's what that's all about. If you just absolutely don't know where to go or how to vote, you can at least get that perspective, and they know where to go get it.
Speaking of the issues, let's talk about some of the stuff that's coming right up. We have the moose lottery is going to be this summer. The deadline's coming up in April, I believe.
It's May 15th.
May 15th.
Actually, 11:59. You can still apply online.
Well, don't wait, folks, because I know that people hear about it. You know, when I was on the Fish and Wildlife Committee, somebody would call me the day after. It's like, I forgot to get my thing in. You know, and you can't really break the rules and slide it in under the door. So, you know, this is why we say get that license now, Norm. Norm, do you have your license?
I do.
You know, so you get on maine.gov/IFNW. You can go ahead and get your licenses, get your draw in for the moose lottery, get your turkey permit all in one place. Is there any major changes coming forward with the moose hunt that we don't know about?
The advisory council is actually, we're beginning the rulemaking process on the permit numbers. We're looking to potentially them to go up for the year.
Oh, wow.
Potentially 2,500 versus 2,080 from 2017. So.
We've been over 3,000 in the past.
Yes, we have. And I think that's closer to 4,000.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah, but dropped back down due to population concerns, and the population appears to be doing well, and they're looking for that type of an increase.
Yep. So what's happening with winter ticks? Is winter ticks still a major issue?
They are, but it's amazing. They just collared 83 moose this winter. In addition, they got 165 moose online right now with GPS collars.
Oh, no kidding.
They just did 83 new ones. And as they do those, they do the winter tick counts. And they had actually moose this year with no ticks on them.
Wow.
So we're 5 years into that study. And it was kind of amazing because they were a real major issue. Major issue. They still are, but they had moose this year with no ticks.
I don't know much about winter ticks. I'm not an entomologist, but is there any theory about maybe they run on a cycle or something like other wildlife does?
Yeah, that's the theory. And of course, the type of winter that we have has an effect on them. And I'm not an entomologist either. And
yeah.
I just go by what Lee Cantor tells me.
And that's not a bad thing to do, is rely on Lee. He's a
pretty
smart guy.
Wonderful. He's done a fabulous job with the moose study, that's for sure. I remember when we didn't know a lot about the moose. And he certainly changed that.
He's really made some huge strides there. You know, we were talking about that a few years ago. I mean, the Penobscot Nation has a dedicated moose biologist, and at that point, we didn't have one for the state of Maine. So that's a big change for all of us in improving some of the information that we get as decision makers about what happens next on the moose hunt. Some other stuff we're going to be looking forward to. I got a doe permit this year. Didn't get a deer. I did see a white tail.
Did you go hunting?
I did go hunting, and I had a great time. I only saw that one deer jumping through the woods because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Very, very sad story, Jim. Very sad story. I've been sitting in a place for a couple of weeks, and I had used game cameras for the first time. It was a lot of fun, and there's a big buck moving right through. It would have been walking right in front of me, but it was going through at night. So I thought, well, I'm going to move up to the other side of the ridge and then work my way back down, you know, early one morning. As I got to where I'd been setting, that's where I saw the tail, you know. So very sad, very sad. But I did my part for conservation, and I got my permits.
Well, you got mine. I saw plenty of does and no permit.
Yeah, yeah, well, I had the permit, but no does. So that's called hunting, I guess.
That's right.
We've had the doe permit system in place now since when, the 80s maybe?
Yeah, it's in the 80s.
It seems to have been a pretty effective management tool.
Very effective management tool. It gives the flexibility. I mean, we had, I think, it was like an increase of up to 66,000, I think, last fall, which was a tremendous increase.
How about Aroostook County? Are they going to open that up ever, the doe permits?
If you get some more deer up there.
Oh, boy, they're coming.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I've seen them.
Now, one of the controversial things that's been suggested, and I don't know where the department has never done anything with it, but the issue of antler tine counts, like doing antler restrictions to try to manage for trophy bucks.
Yes.
And I know we haven't gone in that direction. We've been mostly looking at population. But I know that there's some folks down east that have been really pretty committed to the idea, because some states do it and they get the great big bucks, but they also don't have the winters we have.
Right. The department hasn't been in favor of that.
Yeah.
And I just saw a picture of a I think it's a world record, typical out of York County.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it is a 10-point typical, or it's at least a state record. I know it's an amazing animal. And so we do have some beautiful bucks in Maine. Last fall was a good fall for them.
Yeah, well, the last couple of winters have not been so bad. Now, we had... In the 90s, I think we had, or the early part of the century, I think we had three or four of the toughest winters in the last 110 years. And it really was tough on the deer population. Some of the other things happening, we keep talking and hoping about maybe someday seeing some action from the legislature on maybe a hatchery bond. Is there any talk about that in the future for a new hatchery system?
For a new hatchery, I don't know. Who knows? We've done two major upgrades. One of them absolutely necessary down to Casco. We just put in a deep water pipe down there, but we lost our flow in 2016. We just got the hatchery's been offline.
Oh, wow.
And so that's just got back online with a brand new deep water and a shallow intake. And we're down to Grand Lake Stream preparing to put 2 miles of new intake pipe in there to cool the water off. The water is so warm during the summertime that the fish can just barely survive high mortality in brook trout, and this new pipeline will take care of that with cold water. So we are investing in our hatchery infrastructure.
Well, that's good to know. We had talked at one point, because we had the hatchery bond, I think in the late 80s or early 90s, that failed before the voters, and we haven't really done anything else like it since then. And I think there'd probably be better support for it now if we could get the legislature to examine the issue and maybe support the department with maybe either one bond or a series of bonds to improve the infrastructure around hatcheries. Be a good investment, certainly for like northern Maine, western Maine, where people still go to catch trout.
Yeah.
So along that line, I think we may have somebody standing by on line 17.
We sure do.
All right. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Donald here from Frankfort.
Hey, Donald from Frankfort.
Hello, Matt. Yes, I'm just checking in to see if there's any possibility. I know it's pretty controversial, but maybe in Sunday hunting season, north of Millinocket, deer season. We are competing with New Hampshire and Vermont, and they have Sunday hunting.
Well, Sunday hunting is something that's talked about. It's been talked about every 2 years, Don, since probably 1883 when it was first closed. And I had Sunday hunting bills when I was in the legislature. And part of the challenge is, the fear that a lot of land would get posted if we opened up Sunday hunting. And there have been different iterations of proposals. There's been the small game and the unorganized territories, which I think I was the first one to sponsor that bill. People hunting on their own land, which I don't know how we'd ever manage that. So that didn't go anywhere. And there's even been talk about having archery only on Sundays so that you wouldn't freak people out and blaze orange. But the reality is it hasn't gotten a lot of traction in the legislature. And I think the department's come out in favor of it a couple of times in the past.
We had about 7 or 8 bills in at the first session of the 128th, and they all went down in flames. It's a landowner relations issue. It's a social issue. It's a landowner relations issue. They say if there's any form at all of Sunday hunting, that a lot of land's going to be shut down. Because we're a private land state. We have to respect that.
And one of the things that I've heard in the past, this is back when I was at the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, I heard it from landowners that if you're going to let people hunt on our lands on Sunday, we want to be able to charge for it. And then we get into the whole issue of reverse posting. And so nobody's ever wanted to go to cross that bridge and then have it burn up behind them. So You know, I think
we have coyote hunting pretty much year round, so that's not bad.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, these are discussions that sometimes take a lot of different shapes over a lot of different years, and public attitudes have to change on them. But we'll just keep watching it and talking about it, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks for your call. And if anybody else has a question for the deputy commissioner or Norm, you know, Norm's a font of information, too.
Get to tap into it. That's
right. 1-800-966-1039. And we're going to talk a little bit more about hunting and fishing and some of the stuff happening with the outdoors that we hear about a lot on this next segment of our show, which is brought to us each and every week, as it always has been, since time immemorial, Jim.
That's right.
General Appliance and Brewer. It's the place to go for your camp appliance needs. Now, Jim, it doesn't matter. You can talk about gas lights all day long or gas ranges. You can change the subject once or twice and talk about gas refrigerators or gas freezers or, Jim, your favorite topic.
Yes, at top of the line.
Composting toilets.
Yes,
ride the wave, baby. General Appliance, 91 Center Street. You have one?
Of course I do.
You have one at the headquarters, don't you?
Yes.
Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. They have a composting toilet.
That's my headquarters in Big Pleasant Lake.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Center State Street in Augusta. You could have one. Al would set you up, and you'd be a proud owner at the state of Maine. It's a family-owned business since the 1920s. Al has found his niche in these changing energy times. General Appliance is there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliance needs, Jim.
Yes, and I like that. Al will set you up.
He will set you up. He will take good care of you. And you know something, you know, he says non-electric appliance needs, you know, that's a lie, Jim. You can have an electric range and it breaks, he'll fix it for you.
That's right.
Anything he will take electric. Care of your electric needs.
Anything electric.
He'll take care of your propane needs.
He will.
He will take care of anything you have that you use to cook with, dry clothes with, whatever. It doesn't matter.
You can call him and he'll talk you through it sometimes.
He can be in demand at times. You may have to be a little bit patient because he does take his time with people.
That's why he wears that engineer's cap.
That's right. He's a good man. And so, you know, not just the appliance, but also the parts. He can show you how to fix it yourself. He's basically working himself out of business by showing people how to do his job for him and does it for free. He'll show you anything you want to know. And he has those parts, and he has all the parts and the models, all makes and models, including the well-known Servelle gas refrigerators. And when you talk about those composting toilets, these are the wave of the future.
That's right.
Totally reliable and odor-free, something special for mama. So and I think he'll probably be at the Sportsman Show in Orono.
You know, the one thing about those compost toilets, they're frost-free.
They are frost-free.
That's right. Remember that next time you go out to the little house out back.
You wouldn't want to get a chill out there.
Nope.
Give Al a call, 989-3714, or stop in for a visit at 91 Center Street in Brewer, General Appliance in Brewer. There. Thank you, Al.
Thank you.
So let's get back to the outdoors. Now that we've been in the outdoors, let's talk about the outdoors. One of the questions I've had, and I saw some stuff coming from the department about bat counts. Looking for, you know, they're looking for places where bats are denning up for the winter. And I actually have seen a few, and I have meant to call into the department, but I know that the little brown bats have been devastated by white nose syndrome. Now, obviously, we don't hunt bats, but we care about the outdoors, Jim.
Yes, we do. And the bugs.
And the bugs. They keep the bugs down.
That's right.
Do we have any updates on the status of white nose syndrome in northern New England, or is that something that's still under study?
It's still under study. It's the three, northern longear, eastern small-footed, and little brown.
Yep.
They're all on the endangered species list. And other than knowing where their hibernaculum are, there's not a lot of research on what their habits are beyond those hibernaculums. So they're looking at other areas now where they may actually winter, and some of the talus slopes in Maine and different things and the rocky outcroppings. And it's devastating, that's for sure. We had a lot of bats at our camp in northern Maine, and they're basically non-existent.
I haven't seen, you know, we had a couple of places right in the houses around my neighborhood, so they get up underneath the shingles. They can get it to a pretty small spot.
Yes, they can.
And, you know, we'd see them every night, you know, clouds of them. And I haven't seen a bat in 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah, it's they were devastated, that's for sure. So we're looking at every year, everything that, you know, whether it's the wind industry, how the turbines operate or whether someone is killing bats in their house. You know, we try to give them people ways to at least not kill the bats, just allow them to get out and not come back in again. So
yeah, well, it's a long-term project with an animal that we don't know an awful lot about as sportsmen, but obviously it's pretty important to the ecology and it's part of the food chain. You know, it's one of the things that, you know, I remember talking to Jerry Levine about. We were talking about wolves at one point because, you know, wolves have been extirpated out of the Northeast since the 1880s. But at that time, there's hardly anybody in the North Woods. There are a few logging camps. There are a few small villages and farms. But that's where the wolves were. And then they vanished. And because, you know, everybody has assumed that the bounty and hunting of wolves, concentrated hunting of wolves, is what got rid of the wolf. And there's been some new theories in the last few years that maybe there's a huge disease outbreak that caused the collapse of the wolf population in the Northeast in the 1880s, not helped, obviously, by the bounty program, whatnot. But there's a lot of things that we just don't know about how wildlife populations thrive and collapse.
And they're on the other side of the St. Lawrence.
Yeah.
And, you know, why they're not back in Maine is...
It's a good question.
It's a good question.
I think we have one or two once in a while.
Probably wandering through, yeah. And now with the coyotes, I mean, you know, they're a lot of the coyotes have crossbred with wolves, and they're almost a wolf.
Yep. There was one killed at Russell Pond back in the early 90s that was pure wolf.
Really?
It was coming into a bear hunter's bait, and the guy killed it, which shouldn't have because it was 100% pure wolf. Tested at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Lab, but they felt that it maybe got dropped off.
Well,
just by the way it was acting. So
interesting. Well, you know, it's a big state, the state of Maine. So, what else do we have to look forward to coming forward as we get into fishing season, getting into turkey season? I mean, the turkey population seems to be pretty healthy from what we're seeing.
Turkey population is doing really well, that's for sure. Just looking at anybody's backyard, practically.
Yep.
We'd like to get some more people interested in hunting them.
Yeah.
So we are going to do a trial run on a different type of tagging system this year for turkeys for direct data entry. I know a lot of people don't want to tag turkeys at all, but we're going to electronic tagging, so we'll have real-time data coming in from all of our big game species.
Now, how does that work? I've heard about this, but I haven't really explored it. How does the electronic tagging work?
You'll be tagging off a electronic device, laptop. You'll go to a store still.
Okay,
It's not phone call.
Yeah, you're not going to go home and get on the internet and tag
No, you got to go to a tagging station still and tag the starting turkeys this spring. We're going to do a pilot program. But it's primarily to get the data more efficiently into the department.
Yep.
We still don't have our deer data complete from last fall. And it's more of a challenge when you have less staff. So electronic data entry will be a direct feed to give you real-time data. So.
Well, and of course, you know, a lot of your license agents are also your tagging agents. They could be small-town clerks, depending, and they're asked to do everything. And we forget sometimes they not only sell us our licenses and tag our deer for us, they're also collecting taxes, you know, licensing dogs and 100 other things. And the small stores, you know, they're trying to make a living.
You know what I'd like to see?
What would you like to see?
I'd like to see a list of places you can take your turkey to get the feathers knocked off in it.
You know, we talked about, I think the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine may have a list of butchers that they put on their website.
That would be great.
Yeah, it's a pretty handy resource. I know that that Dave Trahan and Becky Morrell done a good job getting that information out to sportsmen. So, that's another thing, you know, a new sportsman who's never done it before, you get this thing, what do you do with it?
Because
not everybody can, you know, butcher their own animal and break it down and get it ready for the freezer like Jim can.
That is one of the things that we're looking at now as a department is outreach to that. We bring people in for hunter safety before they get a license. We don't actually have a lot of stuff out there from the department on what to do once you get a license. And just that made me think of it.
Yeah.
Is the retention of a hunter in hunting in general to make people feel more comfortable, whether it's dressing off a deer, turkey, moose, whatever. I know last fall with the heat during the moose season, A lot of people still try to bring a moose out whole, which is about the last thing I would do. I can quarter a moose in about 5 seconds blindfolded.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Blindfolded. Just you heard him, Jim, five seconds.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yep. The last time I saw that happen, it was after dark.
I think there's a lot of room for different services there. Yes. Like, you know, I was a commercial cook for many years. It amazes me how many people can't cook a hamburger. What are they going to do with a deer steak?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, you know, like Stacy Guerin, she and her husband Joe own the Flags Kitchen Cooking School. Maybe we should talk about doing a cooking class for game.
Yep.
Show people how to do that.
Bonnie Holding, our I&E director, has been working with some of the community colleges on cooking game. It's been very well received.
Well, we're just about out of time, aren't we, Norm?
We are. We're coming up on about a minute.
Well, that's too bad because we're having fun. We're having a great discussion. First of all, before we run out of time, I want to thank Tim Peabody and giving us some pretty handy updates and stuff that's happening with the department and the outdoors. I guess I always forget that, you know, not having ready access to the information every day is something I miss. So it's good to have you come on and tell us some of that information. Who's coming on next week, Jim? Mystery guest?
Mystery guest for sure. Yeah.
Well, I believe it is...
Go ahead.
Biologist down east. Greg.
Oh, Greg Burr.
I think it's Greg Burr.
Greg Burr, one of my classmates from MDI High School. Yeah. Good man.
I believe he's the one coming in next week. Well, pretty sure of it.
Yes, he is.
He's a towering figure in the outdoors. We'll be lucky to hear what he has to say. I'll be tuning in on that when we come back next week. So until I'm on again, which may not be till the fall.
Oh, is really?
Paul hasn't said anything.
Well, we could have used you a couple of weeks ago.
Why didn't you say something?
Well, we found out about 10 minutes before the program.
Yeah. Yeah, our host forgot.
Oh, boy, that's fun.
Yep.
That's fun. Yep. Well,
we have about 20 seconds.
Not anymore. We're wrapping it up. Well, that's folks, thanks for tuning in. Whenever I come back on, I'll be looking forward to talking with you and whoever our guest is with Jim and Norm on Maine Outdoors.